Chapter 9. Will's speech comes back 2 days after he manifests, when Hannibal finally gets to suck him for the first time. He would have done it sooner, laid back and encouraged Will to just fuck his mouth, but he finds he wants to savor Will. So he waits until he feels strong enough to spread Will out like a feast beneath him, kiss his mouth red and swollen, taste his skin all over. He discovered yesterday, to his unending delight, that his theory about Will not bothering with deodorant is correct. Not only that, for all his chest is nearly smooth, Will has adorable tufts of long, fluffy armpit hair. Will is so clean that he has little body odor from afar, but when Hannibal sticks his face under his arm, the smell is pure Will, so delicious it leaves Hannibal reeling. He spends an inordinate amount of time there, just breathing him in and getting more and more aroused, until Will tugs at him to get him moving again. Will has taken his temporary muteness very much in stride, probably due in part to Hannibal's confidence that it is temporary. Hannibal misses his clever insights, but Will still communicates very well with just his face and hands, and his loud, wordless vocalizations when Hannibal makes love to him. Those are very special. He makes one, a frustrated huff, when Hannibal skips over his cock, surprisingly large, and a lovely deep rose pink when hard. Such a shame that some troglodyte circumcised him, in favor of sucking and biting at his inner thighs. They're so creamy pale, the skin so soft, the little hairs so dark and scattered. Paler still are the backs of Will's knees. Will giggles when Hannibal licks them, and when Hannibal tongues them firmly, he bites his fist. Hannibal would continue to worship Will's fine-boned feet, but they have both been padding around the house all morning, and Hannibal's hunger for Will does not extend to ingesting dog hair. Instead, he settles between Will's spread legs and thoroughly licks his scrotum and the sharp creases of his hips before heeding Will's increasingly pitiful whines and swallowing as much of his cock as he can in one go. Fuck! Will half shouts. Hey! He says pleased, but then Hannibal hums his congratulation with the head of Will's cock somewhere near his tonsils. Will buries his fingers in Hannibal's hair and chants, Oh my god, Jesus, fuck, that's so good, Hannibal, shit, I cannot even fucking believe, fuck, 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 fuck. Clever insights may have to wait a few minutes. Hannibal swallows Will deeper into his throat, and Will makes one of his now familiar deep shaky grunts, as if the pleasure has sucker punched him. Oh, he pants. My god, Hannibal, your mouth, your fucking throat, Christ, it's so hot. Will is the one who feels hot to Hannibal, burning like a brand as Hannibal gluts himself on flesh he could suck forever, but would never bite, although he might graze the head with his teeth sometime, when Will is watching, perhaps sitting or standing in the kitchen, with Hannibal kneeling at his feet. Hannibal grunts around his mouthful at this mental image, and presses a hand into his own hardness, encouraging it to wait its turn. This tactic is not always successful. So far, Hannibal has about a 30% chance of coming just because he made Will come. This is probably going to be another one, actually. Will's smell, the feel of his rigid cock sliding in and out of Hannibal's throat, the taste of the pre-cum he leaks so copiously, all conspire to leave Hannibal's control in tatters. Soon enough, Will is twisting against the sheets, making little noises, his cock stiffening and swelling still further in Hannibal's mouth, and then he nearly bows off the bed as he comes with a long, extravagant sigh. As suspected, Hannibal's abdomen clenches as his own orgasm overtakes him. The experience of Will losing control is pleasurable to Hannibal as any direct stimulation. This is certainly an easier way for Hannibal to enjoy the beast inside of Will than waiting for an opportunity for Will to kill someone. He swallows every last drop of Will's cum, swirling it over his tongue like wine. A part of Will he can eat without harming him. He would live on it if he could. He only lets go of Will's softening cock when Will cringes at one of his swallows. He clambers up the bed for more sloppy, sleepy kisses. Should have known the way to get me talking again was to shut you up, Will mutters. If you can call that talking. My past is equal parts boatyards and law enforcement. Fuck is pretty much a whole language on its own. How monochrome. Heaven forfend, Will draws, but there's a smile in his voice. He sniffs the air. Did you go off with me again? You're very compelling in your ecstasy. Usually I go first on purpose, so I can piggyback on all the rest. All the rest? Will shrugs. I've only ever slept with women before. Hannibal is on the wrong side of 40 to get hard again so soon, but his body gives it an earnest try nonetheless. Some of it is the evocative mental image of a younger Will, eagerly servicing some lucky, undeserving, woman, with his pink mouth and delicate fingers, until she's had her fill of orgasms. But to be honest, the most exciting part is the knowledge that Hannibal is Will's first male lover, and his last lover, period, he vows to himself. Will rolls his eyes at the blatant arousal on Hannibal's face. Of course you like that.
Does it please you that I've never been guide to a sentinel before?
Really? Never?
It's not the same as emergency assistance or routine grounding exercises for lower-level hypersensitives. The relationship demands a level of commitment I was never interested in incurring before.
Not that all, or even most, guides have sex with their sentinels. That's just part and parcel of the way Hannibal wants to share everything with Will.
What changed?
I met you.
Will muses. You're right, I do like it. Certainly his cock does. It's already swelling again, pressing into Hannibal's hip. Between Will's quickening instincts and the end of what Hannibal has quietly hypothesized to be a very long dry spell, Will is virtually insatiable. Hannibal is only too happy to satiate him. Will's feeble groan when Hannibal takes him tenderly in hand is music to Hannibal's ears. He didn't know that he was doing it, but Will was right to hold himself back from manifesting for so long. This whole sentinel business would be unbearable without Hannibal, and his land, and his dogs, but mostly Hannibal. A lot of it is pure fucking bullshit, no matter what. His sensory control, impressive all his adult life, is in shambles. His constant low-grade headache is gone, but for the first 3 days they hole up in Wolf Trap, he winds up with a migraine by late afternoon and has to blindfold himself while Hannibal tries to coax him into nibbling fresh-baked treats. His beloved whiskey tastes like oven cleaner now. He has to wear the surgical mask and goggles to pour it down the sink. Maybe it will scour his pipes a little. Will used to think he had to stick to foods that were fairly bland, but he was so wrong. He has the palate of an infant now, and even the plainest food tastes so complex that eating exhausts him. He used to go years between zones, and now almost every day he comes to at least once with Hannibal's hand on the back of his neck, and Hannibal's soft voice pulling at Will's awareness. Hannibal has a distinctive, insistent timbre when he's using his guide skills that make him even more impossible to ignore than usual. And the instincts, like the senses, they're not exactly new, but Will never had to acknowledge his instincts directly before. Now they're jacked up to a ludicrous degree. Will can barely let Hannibal out of his sight. He has to consciously relax his dominance over his dogs enough to let them roam freely outside instead of following him around like so many big furry ducklings. At one point, Hannibal broaches the subject of a grocery run, and Will tackles Hannibal onto his bed and humps against him until he comes on Hannibal's chest. Will is embarrassed enough about it to allow a grocery delivery, dropped off at the end of his driveway. Later, he realizes Hannibal played him to get that precise result, probably including the spunk on his chest. Because Hannibal is fucking loving every minute. He happily admitted, weeks ago, that he likes taking care of Will. But now Will finally gets that he really, really likes it. The look on his face when Will eats his cooking is the same look he gets when he touches Will, which is the same as when Will wakes up in his arms. Satisfaction. Exhilaration. That's another thing. Whatever Hannibal gets up to in the night, being stuck in Wolf Trap, having curtailed butchering people, he always slips back into bed before morning. And he's almost always there if Will wakes in the night. Will is beginning to suspect Hannibal spends many nights just holding him and staring at him, possibly sketching him sometimes while he sleeps. He is well and truly obsessed with Will. It should be terrifying, especially given that Will knows what Hannibal is. Instead, it's comforting, maybe even exciting. Being wanted, loved even, is a hell of a drug. He still hasn't told Hannibal that he knows. The right moment never seems to arrive. One of Will's instincts he can satisfy easily enough is patrolling the perimeter of his property every day. The dogs are thrilled to get so many long walks. Hannibal goes with him, of course, and they reconstruct Will's dials, more or less from scratch.
How many leaves remaining on that tree?
Hannibal points across the stream.
17. Can you see the veins on them?
Yeah.
Dial down until you can't.
scattering his dogs in the woods, tracking each one's position with his eyes closed, then dialing down until it's a surprise which direction they come running from when he whistles, finding the partially scavenged corpses of wildlife by smell, and trying to determine time of death that way too, rather than surveying the insects.
Miss Katz told me you wrote the standard monograph on determining time of death by insect activity.
My master's thesis. I'll never get free of the damn thing, even though Adams and Glickler wrote a much better one.
Yours is more concise and approachable to those with minimal entomological experience,
Hannibal says loyally. And it's less precise for it. Hannibal spreads his hands.
The precision of a tool doesn't matter if no one uses it. There are killers being dragged out into the light because of your work, lives being saved, without you ever being directly involved.
Will shoves his hands into his pockets. That's true. It just doesn't mean as much to him as it probably should. Hannibal notices and tilts his head slightly.
Profiling taxes you severely, yet you continue to do it. You must receive some benefit in return. Tell me, Will, is it saving lives that you enjoy, or the hunt?
I prefer to think of myself as a fisherman, Will mutters.
They're not so different.
Hannibal backs Will up against a tree, then leans in to sniff and nibble at Will's neck.
One you stalk, the other you lure.
He palms the growing bulge in Will's jeans. Will's dick is developing a Pavlovian association with Hannibal's... everything.
When you set out to capture a killer in your mind's eye, are you hunting or fishing?
Ugh. Will grunts as Hannibal slips a hand inside his jeans. Of course Hannibal would consider this topic dirty talk.
Both?
I let the details come to me at first, but it's all in the service of chasing the killer down. I guess it's more hunting.
It's a savage pleasure, isn't it?
Hannibal fists Will's cock.
Problem solving. I find it most stimulating, even secondhand.
Will yanks Hannibal close by the lapels of his wool coat and moans his reply into Hannibal's mouth. Everything smells like outdoors and winter and dogs and Hannibal, and for a moment he actually feels really happy. Then Hannibal's hand speeds up, and Will mostly just feels desperately horny. Like all good things, their idyll and wolf trap comes to an end. Will's control over his newly heightened senses and instincts grows by leaps and bounds. And after a successful grocery run to the town of Wolf Trap proper, Hannibal pronounces Will safe to return to work.
Do you think I'm okay to drive?
Will glances out the window at his green station wagon. Two FBI trainees, hoping to curry Jack's favor, and, Hannibal judges, meet the legendary Professor Graham, whose classes are always booked solid within minutes of registration opening up. We're dispatched to pick up Will's keys, drive into Baltimore, drive separately back to Wolf Trap, and then finally drive away again. It took them the better part of a day.
I would prefer to drive you, at least for another week or so, and for you to ride with others during the day if you are called out of class.
You'd really keep staying out here?
There are two nights when I have early morning appointments the next day, and so would rather you stay with me in Baltimore. But otherwise, yes, of course.
A week of unfettered access to Will, his home, his diet, his bed, his mind, has only left Hannibal craving more, although he does miss his kitchen and his special freezer.
Will is beginning to see why Hannibal turned to a life of murder. Everything stinks. From the scorched dust and dead flies trapped in the overhead lights, to the goaty bodies of the students, to the rancid frying grease in the air of the cafeteria. Will's stomach is permanently clenched with disgust for once, instead of anxiety. Even Alana's delicate, powdery perfume, applied so lightly it was barely detectable before, is now so strong that Will has to stay on the other side of his office. She's mortified, of course.
"I'm so sorry, I didn't even think," she says, scrubbing ineffectually at her neck. "God, I worked with Hannibal for years and he never said anything."
"I'm sure Hannibal has a better handle on that dial than I do," Will assures her. "I've only been spinning it for a week." Alana's embarrassment is overtaken by anger and concern.
"I heard. I'm sorry, Will. I know you didn't want this. Does Jack know?"
"Jack saw me sniff Hannibal before macking on him and then disappearing with him for a week. So yeah, I'm pretty sure he knows."
"And you're okay with this development between you and Hannibal?"
Alana sounds like she's none too pleased with her former mentor's behavior, but doesn't want to take that out on Will. Will looks at her ear and says, "Yeah, in retrospect it was,
developing for a while. It's the wrong thing to say. She blurts out, "By rights, he should have referred you to someone else as soon as he realized the attraction." Officially, I'm neither Hannibal's patient nor his client. Which is why he won't lose his license over this. But he's still my friend and colleague, and he is going to get a piece of my mind. She shakes herself and says briskly, "But that's not why I came in here. I was wondering if you wanted to eat lunch in the atrium. I guarantee it smells better than this office wing." The picture of Hannibal affecting to be chastened by a lecture on ethics from Tiny Alana, when there are human body parts on his property somewhere. Will is betting on a secret basement. Is so comical that he snickers out loud and agrees to go eat with her. His second morning back at work, Hannibal gets a call from Will. "Hey," Will says, and it doesn't have the easy warmth it had when Will said it less than 2 hours ago in Hannibal's kitchen, arms wrapped around Hannibal's waist, and cheek pressed against his back while Hannibal made strawberry crepes. Reunited with the opportunity, Hannibal hesitates to cook with human flesh around Will, lest he recognize the smell from his work. "Hello, Will. How are you?" "Been better. Jack wants to take me to a crime scene in Grafton, West Virginia." "I advise against it." There are no more insults to my senses there than here. Fewer, actually, since it sounds like it's outdoors. "What about the insult to your psyche?" "What if I can stop this one?" "There will always be another, and another after that. You don't have to consume yourself to catch them." "I won't. I'm just calling because it's a 3.5-hour drive, so I might be getting back late." Hannibal sighs minutely. "If it's after 8, come to my house. Before, come to my office." 4 indeterminable hours later, he gets another call, this time from Jack Crawford. "Will zoned at the crime scene. I think it was some blood that dripped onto his face." "Did any get into his eye or mouth?" Hannibal demands, because declaring his wish to see Jack roasted whole with an apple in his mouth would be counterproductive. "No, just his cheek, and we cleaned it up. The problem, Doctor, is he's still zoned. I have basic rescue skills, but they're getting me nowhere. Do you want me to take him to a hospital or to you?" Hannibal's fingers tighten until the phone creaks. "Bring him to my office, please." He's an automaton during his last 2 appointments for the day. Luckily, he's almost always an automaton with all his clients that aren't Will, so they don't notice anything amiss. Jack marches in with Will slung over his shoulder in a fireman's carry. "I believe this belongs to you, Doctor." "Lay him down on the couch here." The 2 of them get Will situated. He stares into space, barely blinking. "Leave us." "He still hasn't told me anything about the crime scene." "Then you may wait in the waiting room. Leave us." It's as much for Jack's safety as Will's privacy. Hannibal can't even bring himself to look at the man right now. When they're alone, Hannibal sits on the couch with Will. He removes Will's hat and scarf, unzips his jacket, and unbuttons his flannel shirt. He shifts Will until they're laying on their sides, facing each other. He places one hand in its customary position at the nape of Will's neck, and the other over Will's heart. He touches his forehead to Will's and starts talking. He begins with his usual zone recovery script. "It is 7:30 p.m. You're in Baltimore, Maryland. Your name is Will Graham. My name is Hannibal Lecter. You are here with me. We are here together. It is time to come back now, Will. Listen to my voice and follow it back." But Will is very far gone this time. This zone is almost as severe as the one he had after killing Garrett Jacob Hobbs, and has been allowed to last for much longer. Hannibal finds his one-sided conversation wandering. "I should have been there with you, darling. Had I known Jack would return you to the field so soon, I would have insisted on accompanying you to work. Certainly I will make it very clear to him that I will be present at all crime scenes in the future. I almost hope he tries to protest. I should like to observe his wife's reaction when she got wind of it." He keeps going, slipping into Italian as he describes Will's beauty. He would not embarrass Will by saying it to him in English. But Will's face and form are in the first order of beautiful things Hannibal loves, second only to Will's mind. He confides to Will all the sexual acts he yet hopes to engage in, getting Will to penetrate him, and penetrating him in kind, with tongue and fingers and cock. Blindfolding Will, stopping his ears, attuning him so closely to Hannibal's touch he can play him with the heat of his hand. Marking every surface in every room of both their houses with memories of pleasurable encounters. Even, Hannibal shivers at the wickedness of it, the kitchens. If Jack Crawford, who once served in Italy, is listening at the door, it serves him right. In Lithuanian, he whispers his most secret hopes, that someday he might see Will kill again, that he and Will might kill together, that they might partake of the flesh of a shared kill. "What language is that?" Will murmurs. Hannibal smiles in relief. "Lithuanian, the language of my childhood, though Italian is my literal mother tongue." "And you wander in and out of French when you cook?" "Only in your company, mon cher." It occurs to Hannibal that they are no longer lying down. In fact, they are no longer in Hannibal's office. They are standing on a beach. The moisture in the air gives a vicious bite to the cold. There is a drop of blood on Will's cheek. He appears not to notice it, looking at Hannibal fondly. "How many other languages do you speak?" "Enough Japanese to please my aunt, and enough Russian to satisfy Soviet officials," Hannibal says absently, turning around. It's a totem pole of bodies. There must be more than a dozen of them, but it's difficult to count them exactly because they are dismembered and rearranged, a patchwork of limbs and torsos and heads with six outstretched appendages, two-thirds of the way up. There is a loose temporal progression, the lowest part skeletal or mummified, the upper ones pale and decaying. The topmost is a freshly killed man, folded into a neat package with his feet besides his head. It's his blood dripping down in icy, gelid rivulets. His blood that zoned Will, though he was doubtlessly primed for it by the rest of the... It seems flippant to call this a tableau. "This is someone's life's work," Hannibal says. "Their magnum opus." Though his total kill count is much higher, all Hannibal's displays are improvisations by comparison. He feels humbled in the presence of the glacial patience this piece required. There are open graves around them, but no marks suggesting a support frame. "How on earth did he assemble it without a scaffolding?" "He's good with rope. He put it all together on the ground and then pulled it up with a truck." This is unacceptable. Hannibal forgets his admiration. He turns back to Will.
"Will, your name is Will Graham."
"I know," Will says too quickly.
"You imagined yourself as this man to catch him, but now you have learned what you can and may leave this place. He deserves only as much room in your mind as you need to bring him down."
"How did you get here, anyway?" Hannibal takes Will's hand in his.
"I came looking for you. Come with me now. It's time to go."
Will smiles sweetly and leans up to his toes for a kiss. Hannibal gives it to him. He would give Will everything. When they part, they are standing in Hannibal's warm office. Gone are the waves and the reek of the totem pole, though a slight trace of the latter clings to Will's coat. Will blinks and his posture goes rigid.
"What the hell just happened?" "I believe that what you saw distressed you to the point that you started to disassociate. While your mind was trying to escape, the sensation of the blood hitting you was disproportionately shocking, and you zoned."
"Oh, Jesus." Will rubs his eyes. "Okay, but how do we get from there to here?"
"Jack brought you. It was the least he could do."
Hannibal bites back a scathing list of ways in which this falls short of the bare minimum of acceptable behavior from Jack. Now is not the time.
"What? But... you were there. In your mind, it's been known to happen between sentinels and guides. Joint spiritual experiences. Dream sharing is the most common type, but visions are another reported occurrence."
Will blanches. "I'm so fucking sorry in advance if you end up in any of my nightmares."
"Likewise."
The thought of Will visiting the winter when Hannibal happened freezes his blood in his veins. Will looks around.
"You said Jack brought me?"
"Yes." "Is he still here?"
"I put him in the waiting room."
Will stares. "You put Jack Crawford in time out?"
"High time someone did. He's too careless with you."
Will crosses his arms. "I'm responsible for myself."
"By using your unique abilities, Jack takes on responsibility regarding your unique vulnerabilities."
Will frowns. "We'll talk about this more later. I need to tell him what I learned in Grafton." Jack is not so deferential as the last time Hannibal made him cool his heels in the waiting room. Perhaps the fact that he has been in there nearly an hour has something to do with it. He interrogates Will's insights curtly, and leaves when there is nothing more Will can tell him.
"Will."
Will turns to look at Hannibal.
"When I asked you how the killer erected the totem pole, you started to say I in your answer, then changed it to he. Do you always identify so completely with the killers in your reconstructions?"
Will bites his lip and nods.
"That worries me. Saving lives is not worth losing your own, losing yourself."
"I've been doing this a long time. I always come back to myself."
"Not always, so far. And you've been through a major transition recently. I think you should have a formal neurological exam."
Will shakes his head violently. "No way. It's bad enough that my going full sentinel is an open secret at work. I don't need it spelled out in paper. As Hannibal expected, he falls back to his actual goal.
Then I want to start coming with you to crime scenes.
Will raises his eyebrows. That's not really compatible with your 24-hour cancellation policy.
I will explain to my clients that I'm consulting for the FBI, and refer any who are unwilling to accept the change.
It goes without saying that he will not charge his clients for appointments he misses on short notice. That would be unthinkably gauche.
Will is entirely too pale. Hannibal realizes he probably hasn't eaten since breakfast. He represses a snarl. The FBI is lucky he doesn't persuade Will to quit here and now.
Come, he says. Let's go home. I'll make you dinner.
Will swallows queasily. No meat, okay? I can still smell the people jerky. Were Hannibal to ever make a person into jerky for some unfathomable reason, the result would be far more palatable than the mummified remains just above the base of the totem pole. But he can understand why Will would make the association.
Can't say I blame you. At this hour, I was planning on sandwiches.
Sounds perfect.
One perk of having an entrenched reputation as a freak, Will reflects, as people take his freakish behavior in stride. Zoned at a crime scene and had to be carried away like a sack of potatoes? Big deal. A week and a half ago, he started making out with a murder witness. There's no one left for Will to shock. He doesn't even get any sidelong stares when he walks into the lab the next day. He watches a mummified torso roll by, reunited with one arm and one leg, and considers the additional fact that he works in a field where the bar for freakish behavior is set very, very high. Someone has printed out two large posters of the totem pole, as facing the ocean and as facing the woods. Identification labels are being affixed to the posters as heads are identified. The bodies that weren't buried on the beach were robbed from graves. No foul play is suspected for any of the stolen bodies.
They're all murders, says Will.
Just another day at the office.
Hannibal's insistence that Will can hunt killers without losing himself to them leads him to try a new tack, cobbling the known facts into a slideshow like he would for a class. It's trivial to visualize an audience and start presenting, as if this is a cold case and he's challenging his students to see something new. Only this time, he's challenging himself. The killer's design was to remain unnoticed, a ghost. That is what excited him. Both like and unlike Hannibal, who wants to be very much noticed, but remain uncaught, unidentified. A fairy tale monster. Run, run, as fast as you can. You can't catch me, I'm the gingerbread man.
Until now, why is he coming into the light?
Hannibal is risking everything for love of Will. Will still doesn't know what his endgame is, or if he even has one. This killer also wants to be known, to make public his deeds. For someone. For everyone?
Will. Alana's voice jars him out of his reverie. I don't want to interrupt if you're rehearsing.
No, no, it's fine. Come on in.
He shuts down the slideshow and brings up the lights.
I heard about yesterday.
Alana's tone is kind. Alana is always kind. Why couldn't Will have fallen for her?
How are you doing?
Hannibal plans to start chaperoning me as well as chauffeuring me, so peachy. He tries to keep the whine out of his voice and doesn't really succeed.
Good, he should. Nobody should have to face the kind of things you do alone.
Hannibal is one of the things I have to face. Even in his own head, his heart's not in it. The Ripper never felt like other killers to Will. He always took a covert enjoyment in reviewing the evidence. And now he belongs to Will, in some intangible but bone-deep way. That does take some facing. The next day, Skeleton Number 1 is identified as Fletcher Marshall, an unsolved beating death from 1973. Marshall is where the killer began, and Joel Summers is where the killer ended. Will is just starting to think about that when Jack pulls him into his office. Hannibal is there too. Will takes a seat beside him, facing Jack's desk. Jack opens a cabinet and pulls out a small photo album.
I want to show you boys something.
He sits down across from them and opens the album. The first photo is of Jack, younger and thinner, in army fatigues, surrounded by soldiers. It's a candid photo, tired smiles on dirty faces, arms slung over shoulders. Two men have their arms around each other's waists instead. One of them is wearing very familiar dark goggles. Jack points to these two men,
Blackwood and Majid. Majid enlisted as a 3-sense hypersensitive, went full sentinel in a foxhole. Blackwood stepped up as his guide, turned out to be good at it, and they were bonded in less than a week. Next page, same type of photo, different men, and now some woman, including one in noise-reducing earmuffs, sitting on the shoulders of the biggest man in the company, Remington and Pace. Remington was a four-sense hypersensitive, and a medic. Pace was one of her nurses. Remington's hearing came online sometime during an 8-hour trauma surgery. Pace already had guide training, bonded within a month. It goes on like that, men and women manifesting as sentinels under stress, finding guides among their comrades. The same quick-and-dirty zone rescue techniques that Bella Crawford popularizes today owe much of their origins to what Jack Crawford and his people hammered out through trial and error. By the time I left the service, I had a nickname. I bet you can guess what it was. Jack turned the page. A number of the sentinels and guides from the previous photo are gathered around a seated Jack, all of them in civvies. Pace is kneeling and kissing Jack's wedding ring. "The bond, father," says Will.
"Very good. It's an interesting retrospective, Jack, but I don't quite understand the point," says Hannibal.
"The point, gentlemen, is don't bullshit a bullshitter. I ran interference for enough bonded pairs to know when I see one. Dr. Lecter, why did you let your newly bonded sentinel go out into a high-risk situation alone?" Will and Hannibal look at each other. Will clenches his jaw and looks at Jack. "Because I asked him to. You know I've been having a tough time adjusting to my change in status. I wanted to prove I could hack it on my own." Jack sighs heavily.
"None of us hack it on our own, Will. The only thing you have to prove to me is that you have a modicum of self-preservation in you. From now on, I want Dr. Lecter to accompany you to crime scenes. Is that going to be a problem, Doctor?"
Hannibal shakes his head.
"No. In fact, I was planning to ask that very thing the next time I saw you. You beat me to it."
"Then we're all on the same page. Glad to hear it. See you tomorrow."
They're dismissed. Over his shoulder as they leave, Will sees Jack turning to the final pages in the album. They're all baby photos. The door closes, and Will grabs Hannibal's sleeve.
"I'd rather have this talk in your office than at home," he hisses.
Hannibal licks his lips.
"I agree."
It's an uncomfortable sensation, having one's manipulations brought to light. Hannibal has been wondering lately what it would be like for Will to discover he is the Chesapeake Ripper. Right now, he thinks he would be content to wait a long time to find out. Will is icily silent on the ride to Hannibal's office. Once there, Will goes to the window and looks out at the falling snow. Hannibal stands beside him.
"Did you know?" Will says at last.
"I knew it was possible when I saw the stag at Christmas. I knew it had happened when I saw your totem pole in your mind."
"Why didn't you tell me? And before that, why didn't you warn me?"
He steals himself and gives a rare thing, an unvarnished truth about himself.
"I wanted it. I could think of no fate I would like better than to be bound to you, and I couldn't risk the possibility that you might retreat."
Will finally turns and pins Hannibal with his eyes.
"Retreat? Retreat from what? From us? From you and me?"
"Yes, but even more so from who and what you are meant to be. Who else could guide your becoming?"
"Explain."
"No one can be fully aware of another human being unless we love them. By that love, we see potential in our beloved. Through that love, we allow our beloved to see their potential. Expressing that love, our beloved's potential comes true."
Hannibal learned these words at his final initiation ceremony at Soleil Bleu, after passing the last of his guide exams. He never grasped their full import until he met Will. Will stalks forward, and Hannibal gives ground, luring, until he backs into his desk.
"You're saying that you tricked me into a metaphysical biochemical marriage because you love me?"
"It was no trick. Bonds can only form if both parties are compatible. And yes."
"That was rude, Hannibal, to do that without my consent."
Will flattens his hands on Hannibal's chest.
"It was much more than rude. You would be well within your rights to file criminal charges. Tell me, why did you choose instead to lie for me?"
"Because I'm not angry that it happened. I'm angry that you didn't tell me it was happening."
Will reaches behind Hannibal and sweeps everything on the desk to the floor with a crash. He shoves Hannibal down and back.
"Would you like me to help you with your anger, Will?"
Hannibal breathes. Will climbs onto the desk and leans in until Hannibal can feel the heat of Will's lips near his own.
"Yes."
He crushes their mouths together. Hannibal moans into the kiss, opening for it eagerly. Will starts grinding into Hannibal, aggressive little rolls of his hips, as up above he grabs Hannibal's hair and crudely thrusts his tongue into Hannibal's mouth. Hannibal tries his best to suck on Will's tongue, to part his legs and thrust up against Will, to communicate without words his contrition. False,
This is an unbelievably gratifying outcome. And submission. True. Will is astounding in his sudden dominance. Will pulls his head up enough to say, "Tell me you have something I can fuck you with." Hannibal reaches into the top drawer of his desk and produces a small bottle of odorless lubricant. It's still sealed. He stored it there, his first day back from their week in Wolf Trap, in hopes of just such an opportunity as this. Will kneels up and yanks Hannibal's trousers to his knees, then shoves Hannibal's legs against his chest. He wastes no time slicking his fingers and jabbing them into Hannibal, one, then two, sliding them in and out just enough to get Hannibal stretched and coated. The brisk preparation has Hannibal clutching the sides of the desk as if he might float away on his spiraling pleasure. "You like that?" Will pants, and the earlier note of dangerous displeasure in his voice is growing hot and vague. "You want to be fucking used?" "Yes," Hannibal groans. Will shoves in a third finger, and Hannibal's cry echoes in his office. "Oh, yes, Will, do it." Will shoves his pants down and coats his erection, then lines himself up and works into Hannibal's ass, and jagged thrusts that feel like they're squeezing the air from Hannibal's lungs. Will shoulders Hannibal's calves and sets up a fast, hard rhythm. It may be intended as punishing, but it's wonderful. "Fucking saw the stag at Christmas. Oh, just ignore it. Fuck you," Will mutters, his pounding threatening to send Hannibal skidding right off the desk. "It was magnificent, Will." "What is it? What the hell does it mean? Christ, you're so tight." Hannibal feels tight, like Will is forcing open a new place for himself in Hannibal's body, just as he has in Hannibal's heart. It's us. You and me." Hannibal echoes Will's earlier phrasing. He can almost see it. Will crowned with horns and rode by Hannibal's black wings. "Two becoming one." "And you want that? With me?" Will demands, and now they're getting somewhere, scraping through the annoyance and frustration to the fear. Will is not a man used to being wanted for who he is, as opposed to how he looks or what he can do. Hannibal huffs out a breathless laugh as Will bottoms out with a smack of skin on skin. "Dear Will, I've forgotten how to want anything else." "Why?" Will begs as much as asks. Hannibal could say something philosophical at this juncture, about how love pays you a visit or he doesn't. He could say that, and his flippancy would probably earn him the irritated reaming of his life. But instead, he looks right at Will, and consciously shrugs off his person suit and says, "Because you and I are just alike." Will flinches as his eyes widen, as if Hannibal struck him. His rhythm slows, but doesn't stop. "No," he says feebly. "Yes." Hannibal reaches up with one hand and presses it over Will's heart. He can't hear it, but he can feel when it stutters, skips, and then starts pounding along in perfect synchronicity with Hannibal's own. Will can hear it and feel it. He gasps. His hips twitch of their own accord. Hannibal doesn't have to reach for his guide voice. It's right there in his mouth. "As I am yours, you are mine, Will. My sentinel." Will keens and brings Hannibal's hand from his chest to his face, kissing and nuzzling his palm. He's still looking at Hannibal. His eyes are as wet as Hannibal's feel. He leans down, folding Hannibal nearly in two.
"Say it again."
Will's voice cracks. Hannibal buries his fingers in Will's curls and grips tightly.
"Mine,"
he growls, love dripping from fang and claw. Will's hips snap forward, and he throws his head back and comes with a long, shuddering, voiceless sigh. He only sags in the cradle of Hannibal's legs for a moment before gingerly pulling out and sliding his fingers into the wet mess of Hannibal's ass. Hannibal loses his grip on Will's hair and claps his hand to the desk again. Will's fingers are not so harsh when they were prepping him, but no less firm. They twist and glide, stroke and press. They find Hannibal's now tender prostate and pulse against it until Hannibal is damp with sweat and seeing stars.
"Tell me, Will,"
he says raggedly.
"Tell you what?" Will whispers. "Tell you how you feel with my cum leaking out of you? How you cling to my fingers like you want my cock back?"
Hannibal moans and nods. It's true. He wants that hot length inside him again, although the precision of Will's fingers is devastating as well. "Tell you how I didn't even have enough mad in me to go through a single proper hate fuck, even though you fucking bonded us without telling me?" He prods particularly deep at this last, and Hannibal grunts. The coiling tension of arousal low in his belly pulls tighter and tighter.
"Tell you that I can still hear our hearts beating as one?"
Will gulps and confesses.
"Or how about I tell you that you smell like home, and that I've never belonged anywhere like I belong with you?"
That does it. Hannibal clamps down around Will's fingers and comes so hard his vision disintegrates into black glitter.
When he returned to himself, Will is rummaging in the same desk drawer Hannibal produced the lube from. He pulls out a package of wet wipes with a pleased noise. "I figured if you had the lube, you'd have these."
"You know me so well," Hannibal says, beaming.
Will wipes down Hannibal's skin. His clothes are something of a lost cause. He will be sure to tip his dry cleaner extra. He eases himself off the desk with a wince.
"How are you doing?"
"That was entirely worth any minor soreness I sustained," Hannibal assures him.
"How do you feel?"
Will blushes. "Well, I'm not angry anymore." Hannibal pauses, then asks thoughtfully,
"Do you think you could pretend to be angry enough to do that again sometime?"
Will narrows his eyes. "I have faith in your ability to annoy me into doing it again for real." There isn't much point to being angry at Hannibal for being Hannibal. If Will is prepared to overlook the minor details of Hannibal being a cannibalistic serial killer, it seems silly to hold a grudge over him being a manipulative shit. And the fact that he apologized for manipulating you by letting you fuck him into next week, on his desk, has nothing to do with it. Pull the other one. It's got bells on. Still, like the bond, the forgiveness happens without any conscious decision on Will's part. Speaking of the bond, now that Will knows, he swears he can feel it. A constant subaudible awareness of Hannibal's pulse that must be how people with baseline hearing perceive their own heartbeat. Even as Will rides with Jack all the way to Grafton to arrest Lawrence Wells. Another decent thing about Jack. He understands that with all the work Will puts into profiling, he wants to be there for the caller, even though he's not needed. Face to face with the totem pole maker, smug old lizard propped up in a lazy boy, Will stumbles onto a new, or maybe very old, vein of anger. He struggles with it for a second, then decides to hell with it. He lets the lash fly, uncoiling with a crack. "He was your son, Joel Summers."
"What?"
rasps Wells. Jack shoots Will a surprised glance, but doesn't interfere. Will crouches next to the chair to watch the bite of his words. Wells shrinks away from him. "You thought the woman you loved was having Fletcher Marshall's baby when she should have been having yours, but you got it the wrong way around. Eleanor chose to raise him as Fletcher Marshall's child rather than yours, so maybe she saw what's in your heart." Jack adds, in a heavy, righteous tone, "You didn't secure your legacy, Mr. Wells. You murdered it." Will stands up to deliver the coup de grâce. "In fact, your one act as a father was to destroy your son." Wells looks into the distance and says nothing more, just weakly pounds the arm of his chair a couple of times. It's a bitter knowledge, Will has acquired, that psychopaths can still have a fault line of love. He could have used this knowledge to bring down Hannibal, if Hannibal had not cracked Will in kind. On the drive back, Jack works his way around to saying, "So, you pretty much snapped that old guy over your knee. You think he'll live until his trial?" Will looks out the window. "No. Never seen you do that before." "Maybe I was just mad about losing most of a day, zoned on what turned out to be a mean old man's monument to that one time a woman turned him down." Jack chuckles. "Fair enough. So everything's okay, then?" Will smiles weakly. "Everything's fine." He settles back into the seat and closes his eyes, letting Jack drive Will back towards the homing beacon of Hannibal's monstrous heart.